This is the I Read Comic Books podcast. This week's episode was recorded on December 6th, 2015. On this week's episode, Xander Riggs, Tia Vasilio, and I, Mike Rappin, have a conversation about our comic picks for this week. We move on to talk about what we read in the past week, and end the show on a discussion about TV and movies based on comic books. There's also a bit about cats somewhere. Also, if you haven't already done so, please take our listener survey at destroythecybe.org/survey. Thank you to everyone who's given their feedback already, and we're really excited to send you a free comic. And now, this week's episode. This is the I Read Comic Books podcast. I'm your host, Mike Rappin, editor-in-chief for Destroy the Cyborg. With me this week are two fantastic human beings that I know, Xander Riggs.
Hi.
And Tia Vasilio.
Hi.
Thank you guys for joining me this week. I was half expecting you, Tia, to say, Bucky Barnes is my baby. Given how much we talked about it before the show started. But
at this point, I feel like it's just implied in everything that I say.
Well, Tia is one of our newer hosts this week. Tia, could you tell us a little bit about yourself since this is your first time on the show?
Sure. I was an art historian. I have about, I don't know, a half of my PhD in art history.
Okay.
And I don't want to do that, so I'm probably not going to finish the other half, which is
fine.
So
you just have the PH?
Yeah, just the PH. Yeah. it's great because I actually have a pretty awesome job in comics now, so I still get to be around a lot of cool art, but there's significantly less, like, you know, dreary critical theory and boring lectures that I have to go to. So all in all, right, like, things are looking up.
It's all comics, and that's the best part, right?
Exactly, yeah.
Well, awesome. Well, I'm so super happy that you're here this week. As I said last week, I'm going to do this whole thing with dates. I really like that. Comic books come out this week on December 9th.
Yes.
So what are you guys reading this week? What are you excited for this week?
Oh, man. This week, I have a whole thing with Miss Marvel because I love the character, and I had kind of an issue as the series was sort of reaching what I didn't know was going to be the end before they renumbered it, as Marvel has been doing recently.
But there was a big title that said End of Days. Like, that meant it was coming to an end, right?
And, yeah, but, like, that doesn't mean anything, right? Like, when does an end really an end when it comes to Marvel? So
I mean, or anything, if you want to get really philosophical.
Ooh, yeah, I like that.
Does anything ever really begin, then? I mean,
nothing.
We're going to take the Fight Club route, and we're going to say, you know, on a long enough timeline, everything goes down to zero, right?
Everything is nice. A flat circle, including time.
Some infinities are bigger than others.
Yes, yes.
So I started picking up Miss Marvel when they did the renumber, and I'm a big fan of the series. I'm a big fan of the character, and I figured I'll start with the first few issues of this renumbering and see what happens. And issue one is very much a huge, like, recap issue, which you kind of expect from a Marvel series when it renumbers.
What all do they cover in that? Because I feel like there's got to be, like, this implied lapse of time where the end of Secret Wars is and this series starts. So do they cover any of that, or is it just what happened in the previous series?
It doesn't really cover a whole lot of what happened in the previous series or what happened in the event, but it opens on Kamala fighting with the all new, all different Avengers. It like kicks it off with basically setting the scene of what's happening with Kamala in the Marvel Universe, which I really like how they handled it rather than throwing page after page of text and saying, let me catch you up on everything that's been happening in her life since the event in Marvel have happened. And this issue, compared to actually a lot of the other Miss Marvel issues that I've read, is very text heavy. And part of that, I think, is trying to catch the reader up on what's happened if you're jumping onto the series at this point. And part of it is setting up their new arc. And I really like how they're doing arcs in the series as well, because they're three-issue arcs rather than you know, a whole trade, five or six issues.
Well, that's a good way to sell $24 trades with only 100 pages in them. So,
I mean,
way to go, Marvel.
Like Marvel's pricing aside.
Yeah, which yeah.
I could talk about that for a long time and just be really upset, but I won't do that today. So I actually really like how this series has started off with the renumbering, and I've really loved the attitude of the series, of the character. I think G. Willow Wilson does a fantastic job writing the character. I think all of the artists who have been on the series have done fantastic jobs, specifically with capturing her attitude towards crime fighting, because she's mm-hmm. kind of just a normal person. And so when she's thrown into these situations, just being able to see the panic on her face and worry in her eyes when she has to confront robot insects is... I think there's something there that the reader can empathize with.
I feel like a lot of storytelling in Ms. Marvel is done with her facial expression. They've been really great across the board.
Totally.
Yeah.
She's definitely one of those characters that can emote really, really well. Like, for sure. Paper. Whoever's been doing the art has, I think their big focus must be her face. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, she's a teenage girl. She's very expressive.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yes.
So I will pick up number two without any hesitations. I'll probably pick up the first three, this first arc, and see how it goes, and figure on what I'll do with the series from there.
Gotcha.
But yeah.
Tia, what are you excited for this week?
I am pretty excited for Monstrous number two.
Okay.
It's by Marjorie Liu and Sana Takeda. Mm-hmm. The first issue was really, really big. There were 66 pages, so it feels like you're a lot further along than a lot of issue twos that you're anticipating. But I don't know if you guys have read it.
I haven't.
We had a very interesting review on the site, but I haven't actually read the book. This is from Image, right?
It's from Image, yes.
Okay.
I mean, I get really strong Miyazaki vibes from it that there's,
that's cool.
Yeah, there's a lot of kind of magic, but it's just kind of natural in this world. And there are all sorts of interesting, adorable, or terrifying creatures and half humans and characters. There's a kind of steampunky element to it. And the artwork is just absolutely gorgeous. The textures and patterns and the light really give a sense of, I don't know, it's very magic and really immersive place that they've created in this world. It's kind of Art Deco-y. It's kind of Shanghai inspired aesthetic. And I don't want to spoil if you guys haven't read it, but
what's the premise of this book? I only knew that Marjorie Liu was on it, and I think I saw her promoting it at NYCC, but that was all that I heard about it. So could you give us a synopsis of it?
The basic premise is that there are these warring factions of humans and witches and creatures. And certain creatures have sort of inherent magic that they can do, and mm-hmm. other creatures, mainly these witches, can sort of take their power by actually consuming their body parts. There are definitely some very kind of body horror type moments in the first issue, and the main character Micah is trying to infiltrate a sort of witch stronghold, and she's trying to figure out what's happened to her mother, and there's been this big war. And so it does a lot of world building in the first issue. And then in the next issue, I think it's going to take you outside of this stronghold and sort of launch her into this quest. And hopefully we'll expand a lot on this really interesting, magical place that they've created.
Huh. Gotcha.
Cool. Yeah.
Well, I mean, now I gotta buy number one and try it. Like, come on,
that
man.
Sounds really cool.
It's worth. Yeah. I mean, you get a lot for your money. You know, you get practically three books in one.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
All right, I will have to grab number one, and chances are it's just another Image book I can put on my pull list. I'm so like mad excited about that. You know.
I mean, if you're gonna add a book, at least have it be creator owned, and then you could feel like you're really supporting the artists that you like.
Right. Right. I felt like I was supporting Brian Michael Bendis a little bit when I bought all of Alias. So, I mean, it was on sale, but like maybe a couple pennies went into his pocket. So I feel pretty good about it.
Yeah. No, I will just say up front that a lot of my contributions will have a sort of feminist rant sort of tacked on at some point. But this one is great that like, pretty much all of the characters are women, and this is really a story, I think, about women and power. And the title, Monstress, it's spelled, you know, monster with an ESS, like mm-hmm. a woman monster, but there's, of course, the kind of, you know, double entendre of being monstrous, right? Being like a monster, mm-hmm. which the main character is seen that way by these people who, you know, eat little creatures. And you know, and so I think that if one were so inclined to kind of map these larger themes onto it, it's there. But if you just kind of want to read a neat book with magic and cool characters and gorgeous artwork, you could get a lot out of that as well.
Gotcha. Cool.
Very cool.
Well, my pick for this week is the dreaded Secret Wars number 8 because I am a stooge and I am consumed by this crossover now. As I resisted it for the longest time, and then I was like, screw it, and I bought all the issues, and now I'm up to date, and I am anxiously awaiting the downfall of the great Doom God.
Oh.
Despite how much I don't want it to be true. Like, I wish that they could run like a whole year with just Doom in charge. And at this point, they pretty much have, but not consistently.
Until he gets his own series, right?
I mean, I would read a Doom comic book in a heartbeat.
Yes, I know you would.
Yes.
That would be so cool.
But I would want it to be like domestic Doom, like kind of in the Hawkeye fashion. Like, what does Doom do when he's not dooming?
Right.
Oh man, I would read that.
I would read that in a second. even like a 8-issue miniseries. Just give me a day in the life of Doom.
Yes.
Gosh, I love it.
But that's what it should be called, right? Okay, anyway, sorry. We're giving Marvel ideas. Don't feed the troll, all right?
Yeah.
So Secret Wars number 8 is supposedly the last issue, except for it's not, despite what the Comixology pull list says. I think their data is just out of date because Marvel decided to tack on an extra issue. And given where the story is after issue number 7, that makes a whole lot of sense. I won't say anything more than that, other than Esad Ribic's art is still as fantastic as ever, and despite all of the delays, I would rather have a delay on this book and get fantastic Ribic art than like terrible replacement art like they did on what was the crossover book that like they replaced the artist like 3 times? AVX, I think.
Yeah, they did. Yeah.
So I'm
totally
fine.
Well, they had a lot
of
different crossovers for that.
Yeah.
Did you guys see that article about how, you know, the monthly release schedule was established when comic art was a lot simpler, and that a lot of artists are having like really terrible health problems because they're just working so hard to churn mm-hmm. out art on a monthly basis?
Yeah. Wasn't that Jamie McKelvey?
Yeah.
I feel like you mentioned that to me.
Yeah. I mean, I whenever I hear about delays like this, I'm always just thinking of these like poor artists toiling away and them just like, you know what? I will accept this delay. Please take care of your wrists.
Totally. Well, like it's like Wicked and Divine, like just to relate it back to McKelvey, didn't they started doing like one-off issues with different artists just to like give him a break.
Well, no, he had to do Phonogram.
Oh, he had to do Phonogram. Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
But even still, there was on a related note, there was a whole little documentary thing about Frank Quietly. It's on YouTube somewhere where it's all about his working process, and he's talking about how he goes to his studio And he stays there for like 12 to 14 hours a day. And sometimes he'll sleep there. And he's got like a wife and kids, I think. Oh my gosh. And yet he's there all the time working on his books. And in the documentary thing, he's working on an issue of Jupiter's Legacy. So this wasn't like something like 2 or 3 years or like 5 or 10 years ago. This was like very, very recent. So like it just goes to show that these artists like kill themselves over these books that we pay, you know, a measly $2.99 for, $4.99 now, right?
Yeah.
It's wild. It's just wild.
Just watching them interact with each other or just post things on social media, you sort of get a sense of the hours that they keep. And
you're talking about Annie Wu.
I mean, specifically.
Yeah.
Artists, if you're listening, we love you. Please take care of yourselves.
Stay healthy.
Yeah, we love you and we follow you on the internet because we want to make sure you're okay.
Yes.
We need you to check in every so often to make sure you're okay. So let's move on a little bit, and we could talk about what we read in the past week before we get into our bigger topic of the week. So Xander and Tia, what did you guys read this week that like really stuck out to you? And I mean, I know Tia, this is your first week on, but in the last week or so, what have you read that was really good?
Well, to be honest, nothing that actually came out last week really jumped out at me, and somehow all of my pull list like has converged into the same day. So I tend to have kind of off weeks where I will try to catch up on my sort of to read pile, which is ever growing.
Oh yeah.
So the first thing that I read, Red Thorn number one. It's by David Bailey and art by Megan Hetrick. It's Vertigo Book.
Okay.
And I think it's from actually 2 weeks ago. So sorry, but
no, that's all right. None of my picks. I think I only have 2 picks from last week, so it's totally okay.
Cool. Yeah. I mean, basically, there's like kind of a sexy fairy with bloody hands on the cover, plus a recommendation from Kieran Gillen to read it. So like,
okay,
you know, I am all over that. And basically, it's about a girl who goes to Scotland to try to figure out what happened to her sister who disappeared 20 years before. And she has this bizarre gift where if she draws people, they may come to life.
Oh.
Or they will do what she's done in her drawing.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so she doesn't draw people because one time she drew a friend who came to life and violently murdered her teacher. So this is definitely a grown-up fairy story where the fairies are bad. And right, there's no, there's not wishes here. They're not adorable. They're dangerous. And I feel like it was a pretty intriguing number one. It spends a lot of time establishing the main character, Isla. And then the ending is so rushed and crammed into 2 pages to like tell you basically what the conflict is going to be. And I almost wish that they had just made it its own issue, maybe as the second issue. So I hope that the pacing issues get worked out as the story goes on, and that, you know, I know that sometimes you're trying to grab people and so you really front load an issue, a debut issue. So that was really my only concern with it. I'm hoping that it will kind of find its groove and have a lot of sexy bad fairies and
that's a beautiful recommendation right there. I hope there's more sexy bad fairy.
And I also hope that Isla turns out to be kind of bad and dangerous. It doesn't really explain why her creation that comes to life murders her teacher. But there's a great line where she wonders why she also has blood all over her. And I'm like, because you wanted to kill your teacher, man. Girl. Come on.
That's an important thing to wonder.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping that this turns out to be like some sort of sexy fairy extended metaphor for like dangerous female desires or something. I don't know.
I see.
And I was also very excited to read about some Vertigo titles that are coming up that also sound sexy and bad, like Lucifer and New.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
New Romancer with Lord Byron. So expect more sexy bad Vertigo from me.
That's their theme this year. It's just everything has to be sexy bad.
Yes. Yeah, that sounds a theme. Along those lines, use protection, kids, because you don't want to end up with
sexy bad babies
or a disease like in The Beauty, which is another book that I've been reading.
Ooh, beautiful segue.
Right? Oh, that was brilliant.
That was masterfully dope. Done. I'm so happy.
I don't know. Have you guys read that one at all?
I've read the preview probably 8 times in the back of other Image books, but I have not read the book itself.
Me neither.
So the premise is that beauty is sexually transmitted.
Right.
There's a disease that you catch, and it makes you the sort of most beautiful version of yourself. Mm-hmm. Your metabolism speeds up so fast that you just have to eat everything all the time, but you stay super fit and hot, and you know, who wouldn't want this?
This is not a bad problem to have.
Like, except for the part when you spontaneously combust.
Oh,
that's
the catch.
So, I thought the first issue was really amazing, and I picked up the second issue at Comic Con. There was a great variant cover of like a dude in his underwear. Basically, all the covers have hot people on them.
Yeah.
So I was reading it on the train on the way home from Comic Con, and this middle-aged white guy comes up to me and he scolded me for reading it because there might be children looking.
Oh my! Because that's the worst thing you'd see on the subway.
Right?
Oh
yeah. So. Obviously, this is a really interesting sort of look at the way we think of beauty and this types of sacrifices that people think are acceptable to make in the name of beauty. We also get this really interesting sort of mystery of there is an anti-beauty faction, and all of these people with the beauty are being killed. And so there's a special beauty task force that is trying to figure out, you know, who's killing them and what the deal is. So issue 4 had a pretty exciting shootout. So there's a lot of action in addition to pretty people, and the art is really as you would expect, really beautiful. And I think that the colorist especially does a really nice job making it clear who has the beauty and who's just a normal person.
Right. I noticed that in the preview. Yeah. I think they did a really good job of distinguishing that.
The colorist, I'm going to give him a name, John Rausch. Sorry, John Rausch. You did a great job. So I'm really interested to see how this plays out. I think there's going to be some pretty interesting critique of the pharmaceutical industry happening in here, mm-hmm. which, you know, go for it. Yeah. And I will just collect it for the covers because they're so great.
Gotcha.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Well, Xander, what did you? Sorry, T. I'm gonna interrupt. I know you had one more pick, but we're gonna try to jump over to Xander really quick. Xander, what did you read, or what were you? Yeah, what did you read this past week?
Oh, I mean, I didn't read that much. I caught up on, or tried to catch up on, the Omega Men. That's something that Nick pitched that to me, and I started picking it up, but I haven't read the last 2 issues, so I was trying to catch up on that. I finally read Hawkeye number 22, the finale.
Oh my goodness.
To that series. And just because it's...
Have you read this series? You've read this series.
I have.
Okay.
I bought it and I set it down out of like, I felt like there was some sort of like spiteful part of me that was like, I can't read this.
You took so long. I'll wait another week.
Yeah. Series done me wrong.
You're reading it on the publishing schedule. So you have to wait like a year.
Yeah.
But And I think I went into it with just the mentality of this is going to not be great, and it's not going to fulfill any of the desires that I wanted as a reader of this series. And, you know, it actually did. I was actually very, very pleased with how it ended. I think it was rewarding. I think
yes,
it was better than I thought it was going to be. But what I read most recently was Totally Awesome Hulk number one. Which,
man, I was so skeptical about this book.
And I still am. So, the idea is, for anyone who doesn't know about the series, it's Amadeus Cho, the self-proclaimed eighth smartest person in the Marvel Universe.
Also one of the greatest characters in Marvel history, as far as I'm concerned.
I mean, you want to talk about cool people? He hacked into Tony Stark's building with a Game Boy.
Nice.
Like, can't go get much cooler than that.
Yeah.
But
exactly.
But it's him as the Hulk, and I'm all about racial diversity in my Marvel books. So having a Chinese American superhero be the Hulk, I was like, yeah, let me hop on board with that. But I don't know what I think about this series right now, because for a long time, especially when I was trying to get back into comics, I was just reading issue ones of series and judging mm-hmm. whether I would pick up that series based on how good the issue one was. And I feel like even though I went into this series with so many expectations for what I thought it could be and what it would be, it failed all of my criteria for number one.
Oh no.
First off, it does that thing that Marvel's doing now where it is just, it's $5. Entry level price is $5.
For the most part, yeah, a lot of them are $5, yeah.
And I can get over that. Like, that's only a dollar more than I would normally pay. Okay.
Yeah.
But what number one needs to do for me is introduce the character, introduce the world, and start the plot for the first arc.
Yeah.
We get the character. If you don't know who Amadeus Cho is, by the end of issue one of this series, you'll know who he is.
Okay, but, so they did a good job in that regard,
they
right?
They did a good job there. They did an okay. I mean, I think because I knew who he was based on the Incredible Hercules series, I had a better idea.
Fantastic.
Amazing. But that aside, the issue one ends in such a weird place. It's as if they wrote issue one and issue two together, and then they split it up into two different issues.
Gotcha.
It's one complete story that they just end abruptly. There's no to be continued. There's no hook at the end of it that you would normally expect from an issue one.
Right.
Like, this guy shows up and it's a bad thing, or there's this new problem that the hero has to face.
Yeah.
There's no trope like that. It just ends.
Huh.
And now I have to pick up number two in order to figure out what happens. And
that's
I'm
the
really,
new hook.
I'm mad about that, though. Like, that's not okay. You shouldn't do that.
You should write a very serious letter to Greg Pak and explain
very
to him that
strongly worded letter.
Yeah.
Yeah. But so I'm upset with the series right now.
And that's at issue one.
Forcing, yeah. Yeah. It's bad taste in my mouth just to begin with. But okay. I love what the series could do. I like that it has the same potential as, oh God, now I got to think about this. Like, it's not even the idea, because I was going to draw some sort of correlation between this series and Ms. Marvel in terms of like racial diversity, but it's not even that, because he's an established character. He's not, you know, having to enter the world of superheroes on
right.
his own.
Right.
So,
I mean, I think it's kind of an interesting challenge to the stereotype that a lot of Asian men have to deal with in media, which is that they're effeminate in some way, or, you know, so to put him into a Hulk situation, I think, can be an interesting foil to that stereotype.
And as far as him as a character, he's always the brains, because, you know,
yeah.
self-proclaimed eighth smartest person.
Yeah.
And when they paired him up with Hercules in the Incredible Hercules series, it was an amazing duo because it was
beautiful.
It was brains and brawn.
Yes.
And when one failed, the other could succeed. And so it was this really fun, basically buddy comedy. And
but now he's both.
I feel like they're trying to recapture that just a little bit with him being powerful in both regards.
Right.
So I think there's potential here. I'm just wondering where the series is going to go. So
okay.
I think the only thing that I'm mad about is how issue one ended, and that it's forcing me to buy the next issue to figure out what everything is going on. But I think besides that, I enjoy the series for what it is, and it's definitely more goofy than serious. So,
and that's what you expect out of an Amadeus Cho book, right?
Yeah, and that's why I'm buying it.
Right.
But what about you?
What I read last week, I read a whole bunch of stuff. Like, I went through a whole backlog of books, but the ones that are really top-notch for me, or the ones that I really want to talk about, are I read Daredevil number one. Paul talked about it so much last week that I said I'd try it, and I did. And damn it, I'm buying that book now. Like, Charles Soule, he nailed it.
Yeah.
He nailed it, and it was really fun. It's a different Matt Murdock. It's exactly what Paul said. He's a different take on Matt Murdock, where he's more of a hard ass and he's way more just like, I don't know, stoic is the only word, but I don't think that's the right word.
But he's not sort of the fun loving Daredevil from this last series.
Yeah, he's not the same as Mark Waid's run. Like, he's still got a smirk that he's carrying with him, but when he's Matt Murdock, he's way more serious. Which I think is funny. Like, he's less serious as Daredevil, maybe, in a way. So there's a lot. And his relationship with Foggy Nelson right now is really interesting. So, like, I'm totally wrapped up in this book. I really enjoyed the number one. I did not think I was going to enjoy it as much as I did. But the art in this book was killer. And, like, it reminded me of, like, old Brubaker, the old Brubaker stuff, and like even some of Alex Maleev's stuff back when Bendis was doing it. So just the dark tone of the entire book was really good. I also read Paybacks number 2 and 3. And I don't know if you guys ever heard of this book, Paybacks. It's from Dark Horse. I know, Xander, you and I talked about this book, Buzzkill, a long time ago. Not on the show, I recommended this book, Buzzkill, which is about this guy who gets different superpowers based on the drugs that he takes. And it's the coolest 4-issue miniseries you could ever read. The guys that did it, Donnie Cates and Jeff Shaw, I believe their names are, they are doing this series, which is kind of a sequel to that series, in the sense that one character carries over. But Paybacks is about this group of people that work for this ominous being who lends money to all these superheroes and supervillains to say, you know, being a superhero or a supervillain costs money. Where do these people get all their money? And there's this one evil, or this one entity, we find out he's kind of evil in issues 2 and 3, who lends this money out. And so there's this team of people that also owe money to this guy that work together, and they all have superpowers or were superheroes or supervillains, and they're going back to collect the money from these people that have money past due. It's really goofy. So there's like a lot of just really dark comedy going on, but the storytelling is very like well paced. Like issue 1, 2, and 3, like reading those in a sitting, you would like, they would fly by so fast because you never slow down, but you never speed up in a way. Like it's just a perfect pace all throughout. And Jeff Shaw's art is so sketchy. Like it reminds me of like Tommy Lee Edwards, but more refined in a way. And you got to find a page of this book just to look at it. It's so fun. It's a lot of fun as a book. It's like a random one that I happened to pick up. Like Buzzkill, I grabbed back in the day because it sounded cool. And then I met Donnie Cates at New York City Comic Con. And he was like, oh, we've got a new book. And I was like, my jaw dropped to the floor. I was so excited. So that book was really good. Archie number 4. Archie number 4, with art by Annie Wu and written by Mark Waid, they finally tell what this quote-unquote lipstick incident was from issues 1, 2, and 3. And I won't spoil it, but it was...
Because I haven't read it yet.
I know. I had convinced Xander before the podcast. Yeah, before... You guys have to read this book. I swear, if you read number 1 and don't love it, I will refund you the money for the comic book. No, this most recent issue is so good because it breaks a lot of the stereotypes, I think, that everyone has in their heads about Archie. I think this series on the whole has been doing that pretty well, kind of like saying this isn't the goofy 50s comic book that you think it is. Mm-hmm. And number four in specific does a lot with, I don't know how to describe this, like the gender role relationship between Archie and Betty. And
I honestly never understood what she saw in him.
You gotta read this issue. Oh okay. My gosh, you guys. Oh, number four. I thought 1, 2, and 3 were good. Number four is taking this whole series in like a brand new, like really good direction for like all Archie readers. So you gotta read this book, you guys. I cannot express that enough.
Well, I will start that today.
Yes.
Yes. Just got issue one.
Downloading it right now.
Okay. And then the last book that I read was All New X-Men number one, because the X-Men ball, it's snowballing. Like, there's going to be Uncanny X-Men. There's another one coming. I'm getting back in.
Everything is X-Men, deep. Xander. Just, you know,
my whole
except
life.
Your X-Men overlords.
Yeah.
No.
It's my whole life now, you guys.
Mike, you were so young.
I know. I got out, and now I fell right back in.
Yeah.
All New X-Men number one, though, I don't know if I love it or hate it. But it's definitely not a bad book. Like, if you read all the other All New X-Men books, this book is perfect. Okay. If you didn't, this is a weird one to jump into. Weirder than Extraordinary X-Men was. And I think that's just the way the X-Men are. It's just hard to get into, and you just gotta roll with every single punch, because there's so many of them.
I'm just gonna hang on to X-Men Legacy. And
that's
just
fine.
Just we will, that's going to be my X-Men book.
We will never have a better X-Men book than X-Men Legacy, period. There's no way they do anything better than that. Simon Spurrier is a god among men. Yeah. Sorry, I don't know how much, if you've read much X-Men or anything like that. That's my whole world.
I know. It's okay.
We forgive him for it.
Yes, everyone has their babies.
Yeah. I have a whole I don't know, the herd of babies, I guess, right? Like,
have you ranked the X-Men in terms of your favorites?
That's such a big question.
You were quiet. You were quiet for a moment, like you were actually thinking about it.
Well, like, do I give them the top 5? Do I give them the top 10 or the top 20?
Top
3,
man.
And then do I rank them on powers? Top 3 right now?
Uh-huh. Right now.
I got to go with my main man, Gambit. He's number one.
Mm-hmm. Good life choice.
Yep.
See, good. Tia, I knew I had you on the show for a reason.
Yeah,
this
right?
is good. Number two, I'm not gonna, okay. Number two, I'll say Nightcrawler.
Yes.
And number three is Colossus. Like, I'm gonna go with that list.
Okay.
There's a lot more to be
that's
said.
Solid. When,
there's
when
a lot
we actually
of dudes
get,
on that list.
Well, okay.
I mean,
that's
I would have put Jubilee up there. Jubilee.
Jubilee is wrong.
She's pretty cool.
No.
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 No,
I am not a fan
favorite.
Of Jubilee. See, and I would. The thing is, I would put Rogue on the list.
Pre-vampire, okay.
But like, Rogue as a character just disappeared off the face of the earth. I don't know if she's. Because honestly, if I'm being honest, it's probably Rogue and Gambit followed by Colossus. And Nightcrawler's only up there because I have a big place in my heart for him.
He's,
but then
he's
died.
X-Men's, he's the X-Men's Spider-Man.
So. Yeah. But then my top 10 list gets really weird because I put Cyclops on the list and that like makes no friends.
What?
Well, that doesn't feel good.
The only thing that put him there. The only way you can make friends with Cyclops is like by telling someone like, "Hey, you know who I really freaking hate?"
Cyclops. Yeah, Cyclops.
Yes, we're best friends now.
Oh, I have this whole thing about Cyclops that I will go into in another day. Another day.
Can we please talk about it? I would gladly listen to you.
We could do a whole X-Men episode, and I will just all day, every day.
Let's do it. Next week. No.
So the other thing I actually wanted to talk to the two of you about this week was comic books that have been adapted into TV shows and movies, and maybe not like direct translations like a Sin City, but like, you know, all of the Marvel cinematic movies and the DC movies and Flash and Arrow and Gotham and what are the other ones? Jessica Jones and Daredevil and Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. You know, I've been wondering this because I really like a lot of those shows for the most part, and I wanted to know what makes a good like comic book TV show or movie to the two of you. Do either of you have like strong feelings or thoughts about any of that? I'm asking that question with the answer already known in my head.
I mean, I think it's a fine line because I, as a comic book reader, am always really delighted when I pick up on things like little Easter eggs. You know, those are always very, it's nice to be in the know, or it gives you things to speculate about what might happen. But for other things that I don't have familiarity with from comics, I also like them to be kind of self-contained so that I can be delighted even without having prior knowledge of the characters. So, yeah. You know, it's a really hard balance to strike, I think.
I think it's, at least for me, there is a difference between a good show and a good adaptation.
Right, okay. Yeah, I guess I should have been more specific. I mean, direct adaptations are one thing, but...
Right,
yeah.
Right. Because I enjoy almost every single movie or TV show that has come out of comic books, with I think only one or two exceptions.
You're gonna say but Ang Lee Hulk, and I'm gonna be really mad because I actually kind of like that movie. But
no, I love that one. I'm talking about Gotham, man. But
okay.
I think there's a big difference between a good adaptation and then a show that was influenced by comics. I mean, I think in both ways they're both adapted, but in some regards. So I'm just gonna dive right into this
one.
Go
right into it.
Flash and Arrow, I think are perfect comic book TV show adaptations of comic books, in that the show itself is a comic book. Like the themes and the style of the show are almost directly mirrored by the comic book source material. Now you look at at least in my mind, a show like Daredevil, or maybe in some aspects Jessica Jones, because I haven't read a lot of comic books with Jessica Jones in it, so I don't.
You gotta fix that.
I know, but I don't have as much experience when it comes to that character. Mm-hmm. But as far as the Netflix shows, they are amazing shows, but as far as an adaptation, it doesn't, like, it's not a comic book turned into a show. It's a really good show inspired by a comic book. And I don't know if that's like splitting hairs or anything.
Well, you have shows like The Walking Dead, where Kirkman has said that he's using it as an opportunity to explore different choices than what he made in the comics.
That's probably
what I was trying
to get at.
It's an opportunity to take things a different way, or to use the same themes, but just make them play out differently. And also, mm-hmm. I think that it's harder sometimes. You can't have the same interiority with a character on the screen. Things have to be a lot more external. So sometimes
totally.
You just can't be the same.
Well, it's like you look at the Batman, the Nolan Batman trilogy. Those were fantastic films that happened to star Batman. Mm-hmm. I do not think that they're really comic book movies in the same sense that like Avengers or Captain America were comic book movies, you know? And so when you look at Daredevil in specific, I think Jessica Jones has got a little bit more comic book to it, or comic book flair to it, than Daredevil did. But Daredevil is like a very brutal show about a guy who's just a vigilante, and he happens to be Daredevil, you know? And that doesn't make it any less valuable, but I think there is a line to be drawn in that regard.
Yeah. I was thinking about how the viewer interacts with the characters on screen, specifically when it comes to the main character. So if you look at a show like... So I most recently watched the Flash and Arrow crossover. Mike, remind me of the title. What was it like? Legends of Today and Legends of Yesterday. I feel like the crossover is very comic books.
Yes.
In that it's very plot focused, and there's never any empty space in the audio or in the show, like constantly there's someone showing up and having dialogue with another character, or there's a fight, or there's something that's progressing the story forward. So you don't have a lot of moments of reflection. And I was just marathoning Jessica Jones last night, and it's the complete opposite. Yes, you have story, and yes, there is progress forward, specifically because she's a PI, and you need to be, you know, finding clues and, you know, continuing the case.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a lot of moments of reflection where she's not saying anything, where no one's saying anything.
Oh, but that makes it so good.
exactly. That's what makes it perfect, because I feel like in Jessica Jones, you're given moments with the main character, like very, very intimate moments where you don't, where no one's talking, and it's all interior. You're reading their face and their body language, and you're getting a sense of who they are based on that more than just how they're interacting with somebody else. And so I think because of that, I feel like I can empathize with Jessica Jones as a character more than I empathized with any other superhero in any other show or movie. I don't know if you guys felt the same way about that.
Yeah, I think that I'm also thinking about the relationships that these sort of main characters in these shows and movies have with the other people in the cast. And, you know, mm-hmm. Jessica Jones is really, that she's the lone wolf kind of girl. Yeah. And so that might not necessarily work as well with a character who is, who's not so isolated, I guess. Like, her isolation is such a huge part of the plot.
Who she
yeah.
is.
Yeah. You know, yeah. It's something that she's deliberately doing as part of the story. Right. So it isn't even just like, oh, hey, I'm like cool and mysterious. I don't have any friends. I mean, it's literally part of the story that she does that. So
Yeah, it's part of the story, but it's also who she is, like who she's become because of what's happened
right.
to her. Yeah.
So we talked about Supernatural before the show started, and you said, I don't have any friends and I'm cool because of that. That's all I can. That's that show right there.
I'm a loner, Dottie, a rebel.
Yeah. Oh, I'm so happy that you just added a little bit of Pee Wee Herman to this show.
Always.
Go ahead.
Sorry, I was actually thinking on the topic of adaptations. What do you guys think of when that happens in the other direction? I feel like I've seen recently a lot of books, at least in the Marvel world, that seem to be influenced by the popularity of the movies and the television shows. Mm-hmm.
We're seeing more solo books where there is a lot of character like reflection and introspection and stuff like that.
I mean, or even just like Phil Coulson is, you know, he's like on the Secret yeah. Avengers team and they're doing these like, you know, Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. books. There's like you know, Peggy Carter books, things like that, based on the popularity of those shows. There were a lot of like, you know, angry people on the internet complaining about how what's Phil Coulson doing in the comics and blah, blah, blah. And
I think it's a neat little Easter egg in the other direction, like you were saying, how if you've watched the show and then you suddenly pick up this book.
Karnak number one. I mean, Karnak number one, Warren Ellis's book, Phil Coulson is like the liaison between Karnak, the crazy Inhumans guy, and S.H.I.E.L.D. And S.H.I.E.L.D., it's awesome, yeah. Given that I've seen Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., I think it's really cool because for me, it's like, hey, I've seen that show. I was already reading comics, and now you're kind of you're connecting worlds that I wouldn't normally think go together, specifically the whole Inhumans thing. Mm-hmm. And then I think that hopefully it's maybe driving one person out of 100 back to comics, you know, to say, if you want more of Phil Coulson, here's this comic that has him in it. I think that's really cool.
Yeah.
And I think, I don't know, because we've talked about this before, or
we've touched on it a little bit.
You and Nick and Paul have talked about it a little bit. I think it's interesting because there's obviously a small group that are like, keep your movies out of my comics. But
yeah,
but
they're fun people to talk to, right?
Oh, they're not though.
Yeah,
because I started reading was it Brian Wood's X-Men when that run came out?
Oh no!
And Phil Coulson was in that because he's the between the X-Men and Shield. He's like the liaison there, and I think it's a neat Easter egg for the people that have already been reading comics. Just to see, oh, this is in it, because it's not intrusive in a lot of ways. It's just like a small thing. He happens to be there, specifically in the case of Coulson.
Well, they just name drop him, and it's not really relevant. Yeah. It's not super important to the plot, but it's an Easter egg for the comic book people.
Exactly, and I think it's really I think in that regard it's really fun. So I think it's completely different though when you have someone who is watching the TV show and then they start reading comics because of the TV show or because of the movies.
Mm-hmm.
Because when they come to the comic books, then it feels like Coulson's already been here. Like, he's already an established character in the comics. So I feel like in some regards, it's not an Easter egg for people that are new to comics so much as it's an Easter egg for people that have already been reading it. I don't know if that even matters.
Well, and it's a way for people who I think watch the shows to come back and say, hey, I know this thing, so I feel comfortable to say, I at least know this thing. When comic books still have this stigma of all of this weight to them, right? Mm-hmm. Where there's like, you have to know all these different things. You need to know all these backstories. Like I was saying about the X-Men earlier.
Yeah.
If you read all new X-Men, that new all new X-Men number one is great. But if you didn't, they try to sum it up, but I don't think it does it justice. So it's weird.
It can be really intimidating, and I think that people are very reluctant to walk into a comic shop and say, hey, I don't know anything, but I think that Chris Hemsworth is really hot as Thor, so can you show me some Thor books? Like, no one is nice to you if you do that. So,
well, it depends on the comic shop you go to, but more comic shops than not, I think we'll have a problem. We'll be weird about it, I guess.
So, I mean, for me personally, I did that myself where I stopped reading comics for about, 4 to 6 years. And I walked into a comic shop and, the local comic shop here. And I said, I have not read comics in a very long time. What should I read? And just with that, not saying anything specific about movies or anything else, they were more than happy to throw out some suggestions and say, what did you read in the past? What do you think you'll like now? Here's a good series I'm reading that I'm recommending to a lot of other people. So, I mean, I think it honestly depends on the shop and the people.
Yeah.
But it is that sort of, there's like a hurdle when it's just like, it's a kind of a social thing. There's a hurdle that people need to get over, and it's not easy.
I mean, I think that it's helpful to have resources like Comixology where you can kind of just look at what, the flow of the story arcs and character arcs and just kind of buy them in private till you like worked up enough confidence in your knowledge to go to a shop and be a comic book nerd.
I mean, if you want comics to be a private thing, I mean, that's fine. I think everyone should, be open and social about their comics. I mean, in another episode, we talked about reading comics in public and how like weird that can be sometimes. Like, for instance, you were reading, Bodies on
The Beauty.
On the train, and it was, oh, The Beauty, I'm sorry. Yeah, sorry. Yeah. Bodies, different book, totally different book. But, The Beauty, and it was awkward for a moment because some man decided he should talk to you about it. Like, this is why I don't read Sex Criminals on the train when I'm coming home, because
anymore.
It just leads to some weird, anymore. It just leads to some weird, looks.
I feel like the best part about that was there was literally like an ad for breast augmentation, like a really offensive one. Like right there. And I'm like, it's just a dude in his underwear. Come on.
Yeah.
But okay. So I will just throw out there that I think that it's easier to be a guy and go into a comic shop and say, I haven't read comics in a really long time.
Sure.
I mean, I think that almost every time I've ever walked into a comic shop, there has been some weird interaction. So,
you need to move to Grand Rapids, Michigan, and go to Vault of Midnight. No joke, they are the kindest people I've ever met in terms of like comic book shop people, and it's a mostly women that work there.
Yeah, that makes a huge difference.
And that I think that does make a huge difference. And they are so friendly and helpful for people that like need help with any comic book stuff or want recommendations, and their recommendations are like top notch.
Yeah,
like I cannot express that enough. But yeah, I'm only trying to defend it because that shop is the best.
No, I think definitely shops that are the best should get lots of shout outs. I finally did find a really great one in Albany, New York, called Earth World, where they actually have ladies' night, and the shop owner stands outside and like will not let dudes in. No dudes are allowed at all.
Really,
it's great. Yeah, I've made a lot of friends there, and you know, and also, I don't know, the Valkyries, Kate Leth's sort of network of women who work at comic shops. Like, it's definitely getting better. It definitely is. Mm-hmm. But I think that a lot of women who are intimidated by comics but really enjoy the movies or the TV shows, you know, I don't know. I feel like I hope that they find their way to comics to extend this experience that they enjoy. And they're, you know, it can be difficult.
Yeah, I can't even imagine. I mean, I'm sitting here with my maleness. To try to bring this back to movies and stuff. I mean, I guess if you could make a, you know, as of right now, I guess, what would you say is like the best like movie to like watch and then jump into comics with, if you could make a recommendation? I know that's like a huge question on you on the spot.
Okay, so I think that I would recommend the Avengers to anyone. I just think that it's such a fun movie. It's so exciting, you know. And then I would say that anyone who is intrigued by Loki as a character, for whatever reason, should read Al Ewing and Lee Garbett's Loki, Agent of Asgard. Because I think that it explores a lot of themes about power and identity for Loki that are kind of danced around in what, you know, and what makes him a villain in that movie. And it comes to a very satisfying conclusion. So that would be if you're new to this whole crazy world, that would be a very, I think, good place to begin.
Since I know you have an absolute love for Kieran Gillen, did you read his Journey into Mystery?
I did. It killed me, and my ghost is now recording this podcast.
Okay, I only had to ask because I read like two issues on a whim at some point, and I've been meaning to go back to that book because just those two issues that I read from, like I read the first two issues of it, were so good. And like, it started to make me actually feel for Loki as a character. And I was worried, like, I'm going to fall just madly in love with him by the end of this series. I'm certain of it.
By the end, like, it will rip your heart out and put it through like a meat grinder. It's horrifyingly sad. And I don't recommend that one, because it's part of a lot of crossover events,
right?
Can seem intimidating,
right? Right, and yeah, I like I said, I didn't read enough of it, but I remember that book crossing into everything.
Yes,
like whenever there was a crossover, that book was a part of it.
Yes, Young Avengers is a little easier, self-contained.
Ooh, yeah. Ooh, don't get me started on Young Avengers. Oh my goodness, I love that book to death. Like I think I met Kieran Gillen at C2E2 not this past year, but the year before, and I sat there with my Young Avengers number one, and I was just like, I love this book so much. And he was like, it's okay. Please calm down.
He's very gracious about these things. Yeah,
absolutely.
When I brought my Young Avengers omnibus to be signed by the whole team at Emerald City Comic Con, and he was asking everybody who their favorite Young Avenger was, and then he would do a little doodle of them, and my favorite Young Avenger is Loki, and they all were just like, please get help.
Oh, but he's so good in that book. And actually, that book was the reason why I wanted to read Journey into Mystery, because I knew that the Kid Loki thing came from that, if yes. I'm not mistaken, yeah. right? Okay.
You should read Agent of Asgard. It is it basically concludes that that story of Loki and Kid Loki. It's so satisfying. I just I'm so happy that this character was brought to such a good ending that, you know, it's not necessarily a happy ending but it's just, it's satisfying and it's fitting. Cathartic. Yes.
Yeah.
So, cool. And now he's back in the new Thor book and he looks like Aiden Turner, which is great.
Gotcha. Well, Xander, I'll pose the same question to you. If you could think of a movie or a TV, or if you could think of a comic book, sorry, how did I phrase it before? If you could think of a movie or comic movie that would transition naturally into a comic, what would your movie or TV show and then comic be?
You mean a comic book recommendation from the movie, right?
Yeah.
Based on, okay. For me, I feel like a lot of the DC stuff is out. If you watch the movies or the show, it doesn't really translate well to the comics.
Yeah.
Mostly tonally, I think the movies are good and the comics are good, but if you liked one, you're not necessarily going to like the other, unfortunately.
Okay.
For me, I feel like the best tonal translations, if you were to watch a show and then read a comic book that it was based off of the character, I feel like the Netflix shows are the closest.
I haven't read Alias
and tone,
but I feel as if the show and Alias are probably pretty close, because I've heard that the comic is pretty dark.
And Daredevil is along the same lines too. Obviously, depending on what Daredevil series you pick up.
Isn't Alias on the Marvel? What is it? Marvel Max or some mature Marvel?
Yeah. Marvel did their Marvel Max imprint, Alias was up there. Because, Brian Michael Bendis created that character in that imprint. He was like, I want it to be in the Marvel Universe, but it's going to be a dark police detective story. Or detective story, I should say. But it's, I think that's a natural transition. But, anything else other than Jessica Jones, maybe.
I mean, Jessica Jones and Daredevil are probably, as far as my thoughts, that's pretty much where it's at as far as going from one to the other with ease. A lot of the Marvel movies translate really well. They're a bit more upbeat and tonally that really fits with the comics as well, where it sort of rides the happiness train up here, dipping down into kind of gritty discussions about different social topics. But that's pretty much how the comics are too.
Gotcha.
So Marvel is winning this discussion.
Oh yeah, well, I think we all knew that. honestly, how great are the Marvel movies in comparison to what DC's offered us so far? Admittedly, they've only given us one, or DC's only given us one movie so far. But
I liked your the thing that you brought up earlier about it's interesting how the Marvel movies and DC movies are sort of flip-flopped in terms of what you would expect from them. I think you put it better of...
I was saying that if you look at the way that the Marvel TV shows are versus the DC TV shows, the Marvel TV shows are super dark. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is kind of on that, it's on that PG-13 level.
Because it's network.
Yeah, because it's a network TV series. But if you look at the Marvel TV shows versus the DC, DC is on the network is on a network television station, and their shows are a little bit more upbeat, specifically Flash. Flash is the most upbeat, awesome show I've ever seen in my life, and I love it for that reason. But the Marvel stuff is really, really dark. But then if you go to the movies, it's the opposite. Marvel's movies, I think, while they have their dark moments, are more or less upbeat and have more comedy to them in some regards, whereas the DC movies so far look like they're going to be dark and they might as well just show us a black screen with explosion sounds in the background. That's how dark and gritty they are. So I think it's so weird that they've decided to go that route, where Marvel, I feel, they could have stayed in parallel and said everything's happy-go-lucky and great, but instead they went the grim route, because I think that's what people want in terms of like Netflix. Like they're trying to push the line with like what HBO is offering and what Showtime mm-hmm. are offering. So they're saying, yeah. look, we can do a dark, gritty like primetime show as well, and ours is going to be, you know, amazing because we have incredible writers. And DC kind of doesn't know what they're doing with their movies, but that's because their movies aren't related to their TV shows, and I think that's why we have that split. So yeah. I don't know. I love like almost everything that's coming out, and so I can't say that one is better than the other, but I just thought it was really interesting. If you look at it, it's like a checkered pattern, you know, on opposite yeah. ends.
We've been talking a lot about Marvel and DC. Do you guys have any thoughts, concerns, wild dreams for
the
you know,
Chew
Kelly...
television show?
Yeah, yes. Well,
Chew.
Kelly
Chew.
Sue DeConnick and Matt Fraction have this TV thing that they're developing, some shows like The Wicked and the Divine, and I don't know what else, but I'm very excited about it. And then Outcast, yeah. Robert Kirkman's Outcast is being made into a show for, I think, Cinemax. So I don't know. What do you guys think?
I feel like my hope is there, but it's still far off enough that it hasn't become a real solid thing in my mind yet.
Outcast will most certainly be a page for page recreation of that comic book,
which is a beautiful, beautiful comic book.
Yeah. Oh yeah, that book is absolutely perfect. I would be totally fine with a like one for one recreation, because I don't know how they could make it any better. And any different choice, I think, would be a poor one, as far as I'm concerned. I love that book to death.
Take heed. Take heed, yeah. Cinemax. You've been put on notice.
I mean, Tia, I know that you're big on Wicked and Divine and all that. I mean, what are your thoughts on the potential creation of a TV series, even coming from Matt Fraction and Kelly Sue DeConnick?
Yeah, I have a lot of concerns. You know, I just... that book, I think, means a lot to people who mm-hmm. who are fans of it, myself included. And part of what makes it so special to people is that they finally see themselves represented in media. Mm-hmm. And I just worry that part of what allows it to have such a kind of diverse cast is that it's in a niche medium, right? Mm-hmm. Like it's a creator-owned comic book. Yeah. I don't know if it's going to be able to preserve those identities when it has a wider reach, and I worry for it, and I worry for if it will have an impact on the fan base, which right mm-hmm. now is more or less comprised of pretty lovely people who are kind of, you know, a lot of solidarity, you know, people feel like we're all in this together. I don't know. I just, it's something that's very important to me, and I worry. At the same time, we got to keep Gillen and Alexander McQueen. So I wish them all the best success with it, you know.
Totally. Yeah. That the fact that they announced that really got me really excited, because I don't know how that show is or how that comic is necessarily going to translate over to a show, but I'm really curious to see how they do it. You know, assuming they can preserve as much of the actual comic book as they can, I'd be really interested to see how close to the source material they'll keep it in terms of like story. I know that there's some concern about like casting and changing up some of the story to try to make it more like easier on like newer people, but I think that comic by itself was challenging wasn't that challenging to begin with. Simply because of how many people were familiar with like all of the ancient deities that Gillen decided to bring to the story in the first place. So why change it if it's not going to be... why change it is, what I guess, the question that I'm asking.
I think that people are just worried that the cast is going to get kind of whitewashed and heterosexualized.
Oh, right.
You know.
Right.
But I will definitely watch every second of whatever TV show is made, let's be real.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening to the I Read Comic Books podcast, a production of Destroy the Cyborg. This episode was produced by Mike Rappin and edited by Xander Riggs. This week's music was brought to you by Phantogram, Cults, Long Arm, and Infinity Shred. If you'd like to keep current with the I Read Comic Books podcast, you can subscribe to it on iTunes and Stitcher. And while you're there, take a quick moment to rate us. If you have a topic you'd like us to talk about, or if you just want to say hi, you can email the show at cyborg@destroythesybe.org. Also, feel free to shoot us a message on Twitter at @destroythesybe, follow us on Tumblr at @destroythecyborg, and check out our subreddit at ireadcomicbooks.reddit.com. Mike checks these every day, so give him some company. And as always, thank you for listening.
Kit Kat, I don't know what you want. You cannot be here. I'm recording something.
Kit Kat just wants your love.
She does. She gets up next to my chair and she just puts one paw on my arm and says, aww, please, please now.
Please, sir. May I have
please,
some
sir,
love?
Please, sir, can I have some pets?
I don't know what I'm going to do when my cat's living with me because she'll just scream her head off if I lock her out.
Oh, no.
They learn. They learn eventually.
She might have some thoughts on comics. I don't know. She dresses like she has a bat cat outfit that she wears.
Does she put it on herself? I'm sorry. Please. You made it seem like your cat just like dresses herself up without your knowledge. I mean, it's like, hey,
like,
mom,
oh, that's an interesting outfit.
She gets really excited when she thinks you're gonna put something on her.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
that's so interesting for a cat.
Yeah, like
I guess I've never encountered a cat like that. Most
I
cats
had to
just
fight
go
my
like
cats to put collars on.
If you even move her harness or her sweater from like one place to another and she sees you, she'll run over and purr and like headbutt you until you put it on her. You can't just like put it down.
Wow, that's incredible.
Yeah, she's
you have
weird.
A very cool cat.
I really hope I can bring her to the office sometime.
What?
I feel like that's the coolest. That's like that kind of cat coolness is like the kind that gets you internet famous.
She also eats everything. One time I made a strawberry cake and I put it on the counter to cool and I came back and she'd eaten like half of it.
What?
Yeah.
Is your cat a dog? Are you sure that you're not, you don't own a dog?
Is this just a very small dog?
She used to be a pageant cat.
What does that even mean?
That's a thing?
Yeah, yeah. So I went to a tiki-themed cat show once. And
okay.
I met...
Please continue.
Yes.
Please.
Yeah, go on.
I met her grandbaby there. And the grandbaby was not up for adoption, but the lady said she had this other cat who was up for adoption. So I adopted her.
How old was this cat?
She was 3 when I adopted her. She's 8 now. And she was an award-winning pageant cat, but she hates other cats. So she was an asshole at these pageants.
She had to fight the competition,
it's
you
true.
Know?
It's like... So they had to retire her from the circuit.
Oh,
yeah.
Man. That's incredible.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Anyway, that's my cat story. You'll probably hear from her.
Oh, man. Mike...
Yeah.
Can you make your cats cool?
I try and all they do is just poop everywhere and meow at me. So I don't, that's step one, right?